here we are yet again. It's hot outside.
It's miserably hot for some people more than others right now.
To say we just went through 3 or 4 days of like 102 degrees. And of course, I only know 102 because I get in my car and it says 102 on it. And I've been spending a lot of time in my car because my son just had his road test and now he drives. And that's so if I wasn't already nauseous and nervous and overheated, now I've got heat and humidity on top of it. And it's all bad. It's all bad. But here's how we fix that.
That's how you fix that. Nice. Well done.
That's how we fix that. Yes.
Yeah, I thought we would. I thought for this episode we'd talk about climate change. It's crazy hot in the Pacific Northwest right now. I mean, hot enough that that power cables, the insulation is melting on them. And electricity is arcing across, you know, 10,000 or 100,000 kilovolt lines and setting fires, and asphalt is buckling. And
so is this actual climate, or is this the plot of the latest Sci-Fi Channel movie? Because
it could be, yes.
Yeah. Is there a shark wandering the streets?
Probably not, but there's probably some sort of weird, I don't know, ice spider. That was a sci-fi original movie called Ice Spiders. It was awful. Yeah.
Do they just open the dictionary to something and then put an animal name after it? And they just
probably. Yeah. 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 But it's hot. It's damn hot. It's hot. It's hot in places that have never seen this kind of heat. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of our hopnologists is in southern Canada, kind of in barley country. And I mean, he had a killing freeze at the end of May, and like threats of snow, and now it's over 100 degrees.
Oh my God!
And so I thought we'd take the opportunity of the crazy heat in the Pacific Northwest because with the hops that are involved out there, to talk about changing climate. And what that actually means for a hop grower.
Yeah. Well, can't you just get one of those fans that has a little water reservoir in it and some batteries that you spritz yourself with and just carry it around with you?
You could do that as long as your relative humidity is low enough that evaporative cooling will help. But your plants are trying to evaporatively cool themselves anyway through evapotranspiration. But, you know, when it's 100 and when the air temperature is 120 degrees, the leaf temperature is going to be 150, 160.
Wow.
Yeah. The photosynthetic mechanism, even though it works so good at that temperature. So there's all sorts of interesting physiological things that are going on. So the plant itself is stressed, and you can absolutely expect that the cone chemistry is going to be negatively impacted, let's say. And it's just the way it is. For generations in these growing regions, we have general agronomic practices have been developed based on the, let's call it, local weather. And now suddenly, like, we look in Europe, Central Europe and Germany, where they've had ongoing rolling droughts for the last 20 years, 15 years. And no irrigation, because, well, we don't have droughts, right? But what are you guys doing, right? So we see yields declining to the point where people are stopping growing, you know, they're going to stop growing hops, they are, to put in other crops that don't require that kind of, that are not impacted as heavily, like, you know, canola for biodiesel, which is what's happening in the Czech Republic. Someone asked a question on the forum, the Discord, about, you know, what does this mean for, is this good news for non-traditional small-scale hop growers in other regions, you know, because of what the Pacific Northwest is dealing with. And I said, well,
depends.
Maybe, because who says that your weather wackiness isn't going to go all haywire?
Right.
So what's a person to do? It's not like you can say, okay, well, the Pacific Northwest is done. We can't grow hops there. We just have to move to Colorado and everything will be fine. That's not what climate change is about. Remember when we used to call climate change global warming?
Yeah, it's not just warming.
No, it's as the atmosphere increases in temperature, you're adding energy to it, to the system. And when you add more energy to the system, things become more dynamic, which for us means that the weather that we experience, right? Climate is the impact. Weather is the impact of basically climate on your locale. Let's think about it like that. Weather is what changes day to day. Climate is what changes over decades or centuries.
Yep.
So you've got weather that is occurring because of the energy that's embodied in the atmosphere. So if you add more energy to the atmosphere, you can expect the weather to be more energetic. That's not so great sometimes.
No. And energetic, as you know, as applied to, I don't know, a four-year-old, means bouncing all over the frickin' place.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with your weather. So I call it weather wackiness. And we talked what seems like decades ago about, I think we had an episode called Weather Wackiness.
We did. It was much more about things like, you know, tornadoes and you know, spot freak things, as opposed to long-term shifts in the status quo.
So I think it's good to differentiate that what we will see, and we are already seeing it, folks, but what we will continue to see, and it will become more frequent, is that these freak spot one-off things will not be one-off anymore. It will be more and more common to have heavy hail events 4, 5, 6 times a year instead of once every other year. Because this energy that's being added to the climate, to the atmosphere, or that really can't escape it because of CO2, builds up. It's got to go somewhere. And it's going to go from an area of high concentration to an area of low concentration, like we talk about diffusion of aromas, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with energy. It's going to go from area of high concentration to low concentration. That's why we have wind. That's what creates the jet stream. It's moving from areas of high concentration to low concentration. So we're going to continue to see these, you can think of them as like pockets of high energy that have to, you know, like dissipate. And so it dissipates in these what is seemingly random weather events that are becoming more and more severe.
I feel like we could end the episode now at 10 minutes and just call it Why We Have Wind.
Why We Have Wind.
Yeah.
Because I ate beans.
And why did I know that's where that was going?
So as a grower, what are you going to do, right? I mean, if your crop was super wicked valuable like kiwi, you would spend an extra $100,000 an acre to install hail netting. But hops aren't, so we're not doing that.
Right.
What are you going to do? I mean, what is a grower to do? Because you've got a perennial, you're not picking it up and moving it. What are your options? What's most likely going to happen to you? Well, number one, like I said, weather wackiness is what you're going to see. It's just going to happen. You're going to have these wide swings, so you need to be prepared for it. How do we do that? Well, I think we try to anticipate what that means, right? So take whatever the characteristic, quote, weather is for your area and look at both extremes.
Yep.
And make those more frequent and more intense. Mm-hmm. What does that do for your crop? So, okay, you're like, well, James, you live in the frozen tundra, right? So it means it's going to get really, really cold. It's what's on the other end. Well, it would get warm. I mean, warm for us in Madison would be, you know, warm day is 85 degrees. If we have one day over 90 a season, that's a lot. Now, we had no rain in June, which is our rainiest month historically. And I think 8 days over 90 degrees this year in June.
Wow.
And if you look back over the last 10 years, the numbers of those 90 degree days keep increasing in that time period, and they keep shifting earlier in the year. They used to be in July and August, but now they're creeping back into June. And what we used to get for our rainy month, and, you know, rain in June is great for hops, it just disappeared. And now it's like raining cats and dogs going into July, and things have shifted. Mm-hmm. Well, when that kind of weather in those conditions shift like that. That impacts all kinds of, well, the entire biosphere in your hop yard. So the trends that you were familiar with, like your downy mildew trends and your insect trends and just pest trends in general, all that stuff gets thrown out the window. The reason those were trends is because they had, let's say, optimal conditions in which to thrive for those periods of time. But now we're swapping those conditions all around, right? So you may not have, like for me here in June, it's like, oh man, it's our wettest month. You know, the temperatures are like perfect downy mildew risk index time. So you better be out there, James, spraying. And this is what your fungicide program's got to look like, because you know this is your high pressure is. But this year, even though I'm not growing hops, I still look at the downy mildew index. It's like I hardly even got triggered.
Huh.
Because it was either too warm or too dry.
Wow.
So now I'm thinking, what would I be spraying right now? What would I be doing? Because now I'd usually be going on with my heavy systemics to provide me that best control, which also happens to coincide with the appropriate length of pre-harvest interval. You know, up to, you know, so I've got X number of days before harvest and I'm safe. But now if that stress period shifts into July.
Oh, then you break your pre-harvest interval.
Correct.
Jeez.
Now I can't use those powerful chemicals right when I need them most. That sucks. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about weather wackiness and how it's going to necessitate that we as growers have a pretty solid plan B. This is not going to be a one-off thing. This is going to continue to happen more and more frequently.
Oh, sure.
Until a, quote, new normal is established.
And you know, let me make a point about that, because something like climate change, and you're going to probably contradict me here, but as you mentioned, weather has extreme variations in its day-to-day. Climate changes in steps, I'll say, over time. It's much more of a long-term thing. So you're not going to see that next summer's high on average is 20 degrees higher than this summer. It doesn't change that fast. Mm-hmm. So how do you know where this is heading, and how do you know how your plants are going to react to these changes over time? Well, if you're not measuring, then there's about 18 episodes of the podcast we can point you at.
Right.
In terms of keeping track of these things.
Yep.
That's where you start, by understanding your plants. And but Greg, I've never dealt with this before, that I had this many days that were above 90 degrees. Well, guess what? Record what happened this year so that next year you will have dealt with it before.
Right.
This is why we measure.
When it happened, what happened, and what was the result? Newsflash, nobody alive has dealt with this kind of weather wackiness, right? It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you might have had that once in a lifetime, you know, 100-year, 1,000-year flood, but that 1,000-year or 100-year flood event or 100-year rain event, that means it's, you know, just because you got one last year doesn't mean you're going to get one this year. It just means you have a 1% chance every year of having something that catastrophic.
Yep.
Well, that percentage is changing. It's like, well, it's not 1% anymore. Now it's 2%. But you're like, yeah, well, it's only 2%. You just doubled the odds, the likelihood that you're going to have a catastrophic flood event every year, let's say, for instance.
This is why people hate statisticians, because, and as one, I can say that. But you're absolutely right. You've doubled the odds. It's still very small, and yet 2%'s not that small.
It isn't. And basically what you're saying is, okay, instead of having a catastrophic flood once every 100 years, so once in a lifetime, now you could possibly have it twice in a lifetime, mm-hmm. or more. This idea that, well, it's only the atmosphere is only warming, you know, 1 degree or 2 degrees Celsius or whatever, big freaking whoop. Think about how long it takes for a pot of water to boil, and the energy that you're dumping into that freaking pot of water on a high burner, And you're just sitting there and you're watching it and you're watching it and watching it. It's like, oh, it's never going to boil. And suddenly it starts to boil. And then it's suddenly, then it's like you look away and then boom, it's like boiling over. That's what we're talking about. Is it the atmosphere is like that. It's like this huge pot of water that we're dumping energy into. And it's also the oceans that are warming. It's huge. Think of all that energy that can be stored. Because now you've got boiling water, you turn the burner off, and that water stays hot a long time. So you've got this energy stored that wants to go somewhere in our environment that shows itself as weather. These events are going to become more extreme, continue to be more extreme, I should say, and more frequent. So that all leads to, you know, there's not a lot we can do about, you know, hail and tornadoes and things like that. But what can we do? What does this weather wackiness ultimately going to mean for us as hop growers? Well, I gave an example of downy mildew. The same could be said for spider mites. Or, you know, some people say, well, I don't have Japanese beetles because it gets whatever, too cold or it's too hot. Not anymore.
And that's right. Those are such interesting examples because you're not talking about extreme heat or, I mean, we will, but you're not talking about extreme heat or cold being the problem. You're talking about timeline shifting being the problem. And that's, that wouldn't have been where my mind went first. It would have gone to your example about our hopnologist in Canada where they had that killing freeze at the end of May. Like that's when I think about climate changes, that's what I think of. But to your point about the season changing and that timeline shift, that is a huge, huge impact to the way we are all used to doing business.
We talk about having a plan and working your plan and writing it down and, you know, what's your fungicide application regimen? And you've thought about this, you've taken measurements, blah, 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 and you've worked it. And you're like, it's taken me 5 years to figure this out and it's finally working. And now I have to change it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about. It's not a scenario where it's like, well, my dad did what my grandfather did because it always worked for them because their environment was relatively stable compared to what we're dealing with right now. So we can expect, because of the weather wackiness that's going to happen and continue to happen, continue to get more extreme, we can expect, just take it to the bank, that your playbook needs to be four or five plays deep for every, you know, every down.
Yeah.
Because, and you need to be ready to pivot in order to stay ahead of it.
So is this going to be a 45-minute lecture in why we should not be using aerosol sprays? Is that what this comes down to? No.
No, it isn't.
No, okay.
Nope. It's just, I'm just here to say this is what's happening, mm-hmm. right? The data are indisputable. And we're seeing it right now in our hop yards and everywhere else. So what are we going to do about it? So let me just summarize here. What we can expect is that we're going to see our timelines shift around compared to what we are used to in talking about the optimal system, whether that's downy mildew treatments, whether that's aphid insecticide applications, whether that's, you know, whatever it happens to be. We're also going to see secondary pests moving into hops from primary crops more and more frequently, like corn borers and leaf hoppers and Japanese beetles. So these secondary pests are soon going to become primary pests. Why? They're either going to, the changing in the weather and the patterns are going to allow them to broaden their scope, let's say, and branch into new areas, or their primary crops are also going to be suffering. And so they're going to be looking for secondary hosts, secondary support. So we can absolutely expect to see more and more damage from these non-primary hop pests.
Wow. Again, something that a secondary impact not directly related to it's too hot or too cold for my plant.
Right. Yep. And along those same lines, as we talked about downy and our timing, in June, I would be thinking aphids. It's wet. It's on the cool side, certainly at night. And so that's good aphid weather. So I'm going to be stocked up and I'm going to apply my systemic insecticide for aphids. And it's good for 70 days or so. So I go out and I apply that, no problem. Suddenly, no rain, 90 degree days, I got spider mite problems. But it's not spider mite time. Yes, it is. Now it is. So it's like, well, when am I going to, I just put the aphids and I put the thing on and that was $1,500. Yep. And it didn't do any good because what was aphid season is no longer aphid season. At least it isn't this year. Is it going to be next year? I don't know. It could be nothing but aphid season next year. That's the wackiness. It's just the fluctuations between extremes are going to be more and more frequent. So we can expect to look for those conditions that are going to be ripe for insect explosions. So hot and dry, spider mites, cool and damp, aphids. And it's not like I can be like, okay, what is it going to be this year? Well, I'll wait until it happens and then I'll go get my stuff.
Too late.
Way too late. Any hop grower in the Great Lakes region will tell you that was trying to do this in 2012 when spider mite outbreak hit because we had 30 days over 90 degrees and no rain. There was no miticide to be found because, frankly, the soybean growers bought it all. It just, you couldn't get it.
Huh.
Because they're, well, everybody needed it. And they're like, oh, I guess got to spray this. So, you know, they buy it up by the tank load and we're trying to get a gallon. Forget it. So if you weren't prepared, you were screwed. And I saw entire acres of small-scale hop production that just looked like it was set on fire because the mites had just burned it up so badly. And you were done.
Jeez.
You were done with that year. Nothing else you can do. We can expect those explosive insect outbreaks. We can expect the shifts in pesticide and fungicide application timings and schedules need to be adjusted. And you may need more curative than preventative because it rains more frequently. And you see how these things just, what seems to be an innocuous thing, like, oh, it was colder than usual this year. Well, what does that actually mean for you? Were you prepared for that? Or did you just go out with your whatever it is, whatever schedule you had to control your pests and diseases based on 5 years ago data?
On the past, yeah.
Right. Doesn't work. Oof. And I would say the third big thing that we can expect here is changes to habitat. Expect to see new weed species and or weed species that were not maybe as noxious and invasive become noxious and invasive. Again, that changes your herbicide applications and what herbicide chemistry you're using. Ponding water is something people don't think about. They're like, yeah, I got, you know, my soil's not the greatest drained, but you know what? I don't get that much rain here, so it's okay. Not anymore. You know, we saw friends in Michigan that had that problem where they even had their field tiled. And as it becomes rainier and rainier for them, it's just their field becomes impassable because there's so much clay in it. It just turns into a mud slick.
Wow.
And you get ponding water, right? And we can expect, too, that along with those habitat changes, our predator species that are keeping some of our noxious pests in check will also change. So we could expect to see negative impacts in those predator species populations. So maybe you were able to keep your insects in check with integrated pest management, but that may become less and less effective as the habitat changes and your predator species can't or don't adapt. So now what do I do? The concept of, well, climate change, you know, it's going to get warmer, big deal. I just spent a half an hour talking about 3 points.
Right.
It's like, there's more to it. That doesn't even encompass, you know, the freak events are becoming uncommon. And let's hope they don't become common, but they will, at least to some extent.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the things that the to your point, the freak events, the things we talked about in the last the weather wackiness episode, tornadoes, hailstorms, I mean, do those start to accelerate given the things that we're seeing?
More than likely.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. I saw a picture on the International Hop Growing Forum of a hop grower in Germany. Just yard was shredded from a hailstorm. Just absolute paper shredder.
I've seen some of those pictures over time. I mean, it looks like it's hard to describe what it looks like.
It looks like somebody went through there with a confetti cannon full of hop leaves and just exploded it. That's what it looks like. And at, you know, the caption was, you know, this, you know, my grandfather could only remember one time of having a damaging hailstorm in the hop yard. And, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, and this is the fourth time.
Wow.
So it's a real thing. To add insult to injury, we could also expect, you know, new diseases to appear, at least diseases new to certain hop regions like crown rots due to excessive soil moistures, more
Sure.
canker, instances of canker, and what we call abiotic wilt, which is bacterial infections, and an increase in like nuisance diseases like fusarium wilt, and more viral outbreaks because you've got more vectors to move this stuff around, or different vectors, new vectors moving into new regions. It's all a rich, rich tapestry.
Lovely.
But again, so what
Wow.
do I do about this, right? What do I do about it, right? Well, be prepared, right? Work your control plan. What is your plan? Your plan, if your plan consists of, I wrote down this list of things I should spray because I heard it at a conference somewhere, no, that's not a plan.
I'd like to think the folks listening to this know better than that at this point. Although I guess it's always someone's first episode.
Always someone's first episode. So you need to look at what it is you actually need these chemicals to do for you, understand what these chemicals do themselves, and put them in their right places. That's sort of how I see it. I don't, when I look at a fungicide plan or a herbicide plan or anything like that, I'm looking at it saying, what do you want that chemical to do? What are you trying to have this tool do for you? It's like, well, I need to loosen this bolt, so I'm just going to hit it with a hammer because it's a tool and so is a wrench, so this should both work, right? No, not how it works. You need to know what your tools do and how to use them appropriately. So that's how you build your plan. Build your plan from what you need to control, or hopefully try to control, reduce the damage of. That's how you build your plan. And you have those chemical controls at hand. Scout more often. If you're scouting once a week, it's not enough, probably.
Yep, watching for signs.
Yep, you've got to stay on top of it because it's going to move very, very fast. You can't let these things get out of control because usually when they do, they spiral out of control extremely quickly. And look at past weather trends, to your point, Greg. It's like, look at, you can look historical to see what it did, but at most, what you're doing is you're charting a trend. So that hopefully you can make some sort of informed decision about what the future might bring.
Yep. And watching what you did to react when these things started happening, and did it work? Or did it not? You know, well, oh shit, this happened last time and that didn't work for me. Better figure this out before it happens again.
But I know there are people that just feel like, I have to do something, so I'm going to go spray this. And it's like it's an anxiety reaction. So they go and they do something and they feel better about it. But what they actually did was nothing, but maybe waste some money. So, you know, do not hesitate to execute your plan. Make notes, like you said, make notes on what worked and what didn't, and make those weather observations. But you can't hesitate. It's like, you know, what's your escape plan? You know, what's your bug out plan? When you're ready to go, you grab that bug out bag and you head for the hills. Well, same thing with this. If you've built a plan, you need to be ready to execute it when it needs to happen. And so, okay, people, we trained for this. It's
It's
okay, right?
so Red Dawn the way you're approaching this. It's very
Right. you know, but have more than one plan and be ready to pivot when needed. Mm-hmm. Don't get so comfortable in, this is what worked last year, so I'm just going to copy what worked last year. Well, why did it work? You need to understand the why to build your plan. I cannot stress that enough.
Yeah. Well, it gets, you know, back to scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Back to knowing why you're doing what you're doing and not just doing it because you heard it was a good idea. And if it works, if you do something and it works, understand why.
Yep.
Because it may have worked despite what you did and not because of what you did.
Get a little philosophical here.
Sure.
Because I was thinking about how can I, so we talked about really what I said was the sky is falling and you need to have a plan. What is your plan, right? And everybody, you know, say, okay, I got to build a plan. What's this plan look like? And I was thinking, how do I demystify this quote plan? And I'm like, well, so what is in a plan that makes a plan a good plan? I'm like, well, you have a strategy to your plan. Like, what's the overall strategy? And I started thinking about that. Well, my overall strategy, you know, whatever. I'll give some examples here in a minute. What are the tactics of that plan? And there's a, you probably heard of this cool cat, Sun Tzu, right? Military strategist.
It sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Wrote The Art of War, mm-hmm. right? Some really great quotes from The Art of War, right? About strategy and tactics and stuff. And the one, I've got a few here that I really liked. It says, strategy without tactics is the slowest route to victory. Tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat.
Ooh.
Right? That's good. So basically, strategy equals a plan of action or policy designed to achieve a major or overall aim. And a tactic is the art or skill of employing available means to accomplish an end. Mm-hmm. So build your strategy. That's the thinking part. The tactics is the execution part. Yep. And how you're going to execute it. So let's keep those two things in mind. So let's talk about a strategy, right? And if I talk about good old Sun Tzu again, right? Anticipate your enemy. Basically, know your enemy. You must become your enemy. You have to become an aphid, Greg.
I was going to say, what does an aphid sound like? Really? That's what it's... Oh, Lord.
Oh. So what's your strategy, right? And based on, since this is whole thing's about weather wackiness and climate change, I'm like, okay, well, we're going to base our strategy on weather expectations, right? So I'm expecting, what am I expecting to happen given observations that I've been making and what I know about my changing climate locally? Hmm. What's that going to mean for me? So one of three things is going to happen. It's going to stay the same. It's going to, let's say, temperature. It's going to stay the same. It's going to get hotter, or it's going to be colder. What does each one of those scenarios produce for me? So it's like, okay, I have a strategy in case it's projected to be hotter than normal. I have a strategy in case it's projected to be cooler than normal. And I look at that strategy because I'm projecting out what happens in my production system when those conditions occur.
Yep.
And so I'm looking for, you know, likely pest impact and disease pressure. And I'm just talking about kind of maintenance, but also, you know, when we're talking temperature, we're talking plant growth stages and timing. So how does my timings need to shift for various things to hit my optimum physiological state? All that kind of stuff.
Yep. And that's just the one example of temperature fluctuation. You do it all over again for moisture fluctuation and you know, drought versus too much rainfall. There are so many things to look at in that concept of, you know, a normal path versus too much versus too little. And they all impact each other.
Right. And if I take this, let's focus on pests, my insect pests, mm-hmm. under this strategy. So what's my strategy for insect
pests? As opposed to the neighborhood kid pest? I mean, what are
right? What is, human pests. Yeah, okay. Yeah, human pests, insect pests, in-law pests, whatever you want to use. Mm-hmm. We're going to use temperature as the variable. It could be moisture, it could be whatever. It doesn't matter. But okay, well, what's going to happen if it gets too warm or warmer than I expect? Or what's going to happen if it's cooler than I expect? And what can I expect from the pest population? Right? Who are they? Right? Anticipate the enemy. I have to identify who my enemy is and assign a threat level, right? So how big of a threat does this pose to you? Because it may be like, yeah, the leafhoppers could show up, but meh, I'll accept that damage. So if the population is 5 times worse than it was last year, it's not, is it going to like destroy my crop? No, it's not. But if Japanese beetles move in, that could be a major problem.
Sure.
So say, oh, who's the pest, right? What's their likely outcome given these climate changey things? And what, how big of a threat does this pose to your operation? And then I'd say, look at the seasonal timing. When do you expect them to show up into those scenarios? Because you could hear, well, it's going to be warmer than, you know, average this summer. Well, what does that mean? Does that just mean it's going to just be warmer in general by a few degrees, or you're going to have like a month of sweltering heat and no rain? Because we ideally what we would do is we'd say these are the ones that are going to be the problem, and this is when I anticipate that they're going to be a problem. You may not be able to do that, you know, to be ready to respond, you know, 6 months in advance. But it's like, I know who you are, I know how big of a problem you pose for me. And I have an idea when you're going to show up, mm-hmm. right? And I was thinking, like, well, how would I then group these pests together? Because how I react to them is going to depend on what type of insect, you know, let's say pests they are. So I'm like, I'll group them into suckers and munchers. Suckers of leaf juices and munchers of leaf tissue, because my execution of my strategy, so the tactics I use to address those two, are different. Mm-hmm. And so all that stuff together is what I call our uninvited guest list.
Suckers and munchers.
Suckers and munchers, right? And again, as part of your strategy, what's your operation philosophy, right? If you are conventional chemistry, then you're going to have one set of parameters. If you are organic, you're going to have another set of parameters. If you're biodynamic, you're going to have a third set of parameters. So it's like, what's your operation philosophy? Because that's going to inform your overall strategy and certainly your tactics, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then from there, you can say what control tools are available. And, hey, can any of these tools handle multiple pests? I'm going to try to be efficient. And ask yourself, can I use these tools? I mean, can I do it legally? But then also, can I get a hold of them? And do I have the right equipment?
Yeah.
Because you may not. You may say, yeah, you need to put this through the irrigation system. You're like, oh, I don't have a fertilizer injector. Well, then you can't use that chemical or whatever that control tool is. Mm-hmm. So I think from there, we can devise tactics. Because we have a strategy. We know who we are. We know how we like to do stuff. We've identified who the enemy is, what threat level they pose, and when we think they're going to get here.
To your point, those tactics are very much influenced by your available resources.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm going to go back to Sun Tzu again. He says, those who are victorious plan effectively and change decisively. They are like a great river that maintains its course but adjusts its flow. I like that a lot.
Yeah. That is very similar to something you say all the time, which is no plan survives implementation, which is that you need to stick to your guns, but at the same time, very contradictory, be willing to shift and make those decisions. You know, you can't hem and haw about it. When something's not working, you need to shift.
And it's
hard.
It's hard. It's reviewing your threats, right? Matching the tools to the threat and being prepared to pivot. Saying, this is what I'm going to do and this is why I'm doing it. But if the data that I'm getting from whatever my observations are say to do something else, I will do it. And I will pivot. Mm-hmm. to address the issue. Those are tactics, right? Review the threat, match the threat to the tools, and be prepared to pivot.
Yep.
And that will put you in the best position to execute your strategy. And that's all we can do. I mean, mm-hmm. all we can do is, it's one of your mottos, be prepared.
Yes.
Right?
I've been known to say that.
Mm-hmm. Be prepared. And this is a huge part of being prepared is that rundown that I just went through. That's how a grower is going to be successful in a production world where weather wackiness is the norm.
This is why people hate statistics.